Today, you're on Birdland BS. It's episode 58. We got a lot to cover. The Ravens roster review, just Mullins around, and some bad turtle soup. All this and more. Stay tuned. You thought we'd start the show off like that? Birdland BS. Check it out. What's going on, Birdland BSers? It's Fred and Scott.
What's up?
Episode 58. We're calling this one Cedric the Entertainer. It's my man.
Fred's going to go on a soapbox rant tonight.
Yes, sir.
You better be prepared for it, YouTubers and Facebook Livers.
Little pat on the back there with the Cedric Mullins. I'm excited for the kid, man. I got a lot to say about that situation. So excited for that. We got a lot to cover in this episode, man. We got Ravens preseason game number 2 for them, but week number 1 in the preseason, however you want to look at that thing.
Ish. Yeah.
Yeah. We got the Cedric Mullins call up to the major leagues. We got some bad turtle soup stewing at the University of Maryland right now, and a lot of unfortunate things going on and big investigation going on. We'll dive into that.
It's about to be burnt soup.
Yeah, it's not a good situation for the University of Maryland and the McNair family. So, like I said, a lot to cover. How was your week, Scott? Anything fun?
Well, it's been an interesting week, nonetheless. Yeah. I did go, and we're going to talk about it later. I did go to the Aberdeen Ironbirds game. Got to see nice. Our newest addition, John Carmona. So I'll talk about what I saw there. You and I went to Ravens training camp.
Yes, sir.
That was awesome experience. They treated everybody well. It was hot.
Yeah.
It was hot.
And we both that was made hot in places you shouldn't be.
Well, and we both made the mistake of wearing a black shirt for that day.
We made the mistake of wearing a black shirt, and then we made the mistake of sitting in the very front row, not under shade, sun blazing on us the entire time, and didn't move.
Directly at us. Yeah, no, it wasn't happening. Some personal stuff going on, you know about it. But everything's all good now. Everybody's healthy. So
glad to hear that.
It's fun stuff. I found out I actually will have to be undergoing surgery at some point. Got to go under the knife. Nothing major though, so it should be up and running in days.
Well, if we got to do this thing from the hospital, we'll do it from the hospital.
Don't it. Yeah. We'll do a live shot from the hospital bed. You know what? I'm gonna make it a point to do like a Facebook or YouTube live when I'm in the hospital and just be like, hey, when I'm all looped up. That would be an interesting one.
Same thing. I got to go to training camp with you this week. Was fortunate enough, obviously, this was my first experience as a PSL owner in my PSL seats at the Ravens. So got to experience what was a pretty entertaining preseason game, considering most preseason games are not very entertaining.
How was entering the stadium, by the way, with the ticket? Was that a complete mess? I feel like it was going to be.
We got there early enough that we didn't really get the congestion. I'm sure, like, with people fumbling through their phones, trying to pull up the tickets and, the card situation and trying to get all that, I'm sure it created a little bit of a fiasco. But, I mean, if you're smart about it and you plan ahead, plan ahead with it, and you move them to your Apple wallet, like that tells you to do, you don't need Wi-Fi, you don't need cell phone, service or anything. You literally just go into your Apple wallet, boom, the tickets are there, and they scan them.
Right.
It's for those people that don't come prepared, or their batteries are dead in their cell phones, and I'm sure that's probably happened already, and then they got to look up their account in some way. I don't know. But we didn't have any problems getting in, and the little bit of crowd that was there when we were getting in, like I said, we got there early.
Did you use your card or your Apple wallet?
No, I used the Apple wallet. Right. Yeah, the card stayed at home. Figured I'd download all the tickets into my Apple wallet first thing. So I've got them all there and
makes it easy.
Yeah, man. I made it really easy getting in.
Oh, by the way, I forgot. I was at Cedric Mullins' first game.
Yeah, I was a little jealous. I almost literally purchased a single ticket just to go down there by my lonesome just to watch that game. And, I'm sad I didn't, because it was a great game.
I got. We'll get into that later, man.
But yeah, I'm sad that I didn't get to go, and jealous that you did, for sure. But yeah, first let's dive a little bit into the Ravens. Like we said, the preseason game number two, big offensive showing in the sense that the Ravens scored 33 points in this game. Almost pitched a shutout. Wasn't until the fourth quarter that the Rams put up a touchdown. So Ravens win this game 33-7. Lot to pull out from this game, and I was kind of surprised. Now, you have to kind of preference a lot of this stuff. You got to remember, this was the first preseason game for the Rams, so the Ravens did have that in their back pocket, that they did have one other game against another team. Secondly, the Rams didn't play any of their ones, hardly. You didn't see your Todd Gurley's. Jared Goff wasn't out there. None of their number one receivers or anything were out there. So, albeit the Ravens win 33-7, it was against twos and threes. But take that for what it is. These are still NFL players, and these are guys that are hungry because they're playing for their NFL careers. They're playing for jobs. So it's not like these were, you know, just lackadaisical players. And not to mention, the Rams are a pretty deep team.
Right.
You know, if you ask some people, they're a Super Bowl built team for this coming year. You know, it's a good team. So it was a good test for us.
Well, part of that too is I think they didn't play their players because you just played us all week in it was 2 days, yeah. But you know, you already saw enough of our first stringers. They didn't really need to make it happen.
Right. Now that's true.
I was surprised the Ravens, you know, let some of their first string guys go out there as long as they did.
Yeah. I mean, this was our first look at Joe Flacco and the first string offense. We got to see Michael Crabtree and John Brown and Alex Collins and the starting offensive line minus Marshall Yanda. So it was nice to see. I mean, granted, they were only out there. Speaking of Joe Flacco, he was only out there for the one drive, but Flacco looked sharp, man. Again, one of the things that I've been really impressed with him, watching him in practice at training camp and then seeing it translate into the game, is his mobility. It's been something I haven't seen in years,
right,
from Flacco. I mean, it's Flacco, like I said, because of all the injuries and everything, has been almost like a statue in many ways. You saw him roll out of the pocket. You even saw him run and actually slid and looked okay doing it. He had a 4-yard game where he actually looked like he knew what he was doing with sliding. Didn't have that knee brace on to get dug into the ground and hung up on him or anything like that. So
who's going
to
be a better slider this year, Joe Flacco or Lamar Jackson or RG3? Pick one.
Yeah, right. Now Lamar still needs to learn to get down.
I don't know that he knows the definition of slide at this point.
And I'm hoping RG3 is barking in his ear about that, because that's the only way he's going to extend his career. But it's like I said, Flacco led the team down in his one and only drive, threw a touchdown to Pat Ricard. So, like I said, the offense looked good, first string offense. I think one of the things about the first stringers, the two wide receivers that kind of stood out to me the most, Michael Crabtree. Dude's a savvy vet. And what I mean by that is he had a 30-yard gain, and it was all off of a simple curl route. He ran a 15-yard curl route, came back, saw that he was covered, broke coverage and turned up field, and Flacco hit him. If Flacco would have hit him in stride a little bit better, could have broke for a touchdown, but Flacco underthrew it a little bit, so he had to slow down, and the DB ended up catching up to him. But just football smarts.
Right.
Crabtree is not the burner that he once was. He doesn't have a whole lot of speed, but he runs really crisp and good routes. You can see he's got good hands. And like I said, there's something to say about football smarts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when a guy can make a cut and make a defender take that extra step to the inside, and you turn, that gives you that extra step or extra edge to go to the outside.
Right.
You're gonna be able to get over top of them all day long. You don't, at that point, you don't need the speed. You just need, you know, a word that we use a lot is shiftiness. Right. You need a little bit of that shiftiness, you know, at the wide receiver position, especially at a guy like him, you know, Willie Snead, you know, right. Those are the type of guys that you need to be able to, when you need them, get it over top of the defense. They don't always need to burn them.
Right.
You know, you just need to be shifty and get around them, because you also got to remember, you can burn them all you want. You got to worry about that safety coming at you as well.
Right. Another guy that I thought looked really good and kind of surprising to me, and if you listen to John Harbaugh, he's been better than advertised, John Brown. You and I got a chance to see him a little bit in training camp, and you can tell him and Flacco already have a pretty nice chemistry together, that they're able to throw the ball down the field. Flacco is able to hit this guy in stride, which has always been my thing with Flacco, is being able to hit a receiver on the move and let him continue moving. He seems to throw to spots where the receivers have to stop and wait for the ball to come to him, and it kind of takes away the whole advantage of having that top end speed if you got to stop and wait for the ball to come to you. But what we're seeing in some of these practices, and what we saw in, you know, this preseason game, was Flacco able to hit John Brown in stride, and that could mean big plays for this guy in the future this year.
Yeah, no, I mean, usually we've seen a lot of times where Joe's, you know, and we saw it a little bit during the training camp visit that you and I went to with Joe, and one of them was with John Brown. He overthrew him a little bit. I think it was a mix up on the route that Brown was supposed to run during that, but at the same time, Joe has a history of underthrowing guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes exactly by a lot.
Yeah.
And to see occasionally a little bit of an overthrow, I'm okay with that.
Right.
Which I guess I've always like thought about it this way. Coming and seeing Joe Flacco underthrow guys as much as he does, and you think back to when he threw from a knee,
right,
60 some yards,
yeah,
and hit a guy in stride. Like, how are you under throwing guys?
Well, I think part of that goes back to what we were just saying earlier about his lack of mobility in the pocket. You think if you're standing in the middle of the football field and you can't roll out of the pocket one way or the other because you're injured and you can't get away from it, you're having to throw the football not just down the field but across the field a good distance. So that's taking some of your ability, your deep ball ability away.
Right.
Whereas if you can roll out of the pocket, if you know you're going to throw to John Brown down the right sideline and you can kind of roll that way and get yourself another 10 or 15 yards closer, you're going to be able to hit your receivers in stride much better. Now, obviously, he's always done well with his receivers across the middle, and that's because he stands and, you know, he's in the middle of the pocket. He's in the middle of the field, so it's easier for him to hit a target that's straight ahead and right in front of him. I think that's why I say I think this mobility thing, I'm not talking about the running game. I don't think he's going to end up putting up 50, 60 yards and rushing a game or anything by any means. But just the ability to get outside of the pocket, get away from the pressure, extend plays a little bit longer, and give yourself a little bit better of a line in throwing the ball is going to go a long way for Flacco this year. And we saw that just in the one drive
right.
that he had, and we've seen it so far in training camp.
Well, the thing that's helped him too is the offensive line. You've said it before. Offensive line looked good.
Yeah.
And Orlando Brown is really starting to shift some eyes. And here's one thing that does scare me, because I know they want to get him more looks, and that's great. But at the same time, it does scare me a little bit of how much we're putting him on the field. With given the history of the Ravens with injuries, this is not a guy I want to getting injured. I know he needs looks, but I don't want him getting injured just because we want to get him an extra look or two.
And I think you're going to start to see his time start on the first string start to dwindle down a little bit. They actually made some comments the other day that James Hurst is actually going to start getting some looks at right tackle, which is going to help preserve.
Take some pressure off of him.
Yeah, exactly. You got to understand, you know, Orlando Brown's never played the right side of the line. So this is all new to him, albeit, yes, it's a tackle position, but your footing is all backwards. Everything is reversed from the way you did it before. So it takes a little bit of time, and it takes a little bit of, you know, getting used to doing those things. And now he's had two pretty much almost full football games. Cause I mean, he played, right. I'd say both of these games, he played 80% of the snaps, you know, midway through the third quarter, at least for both of those games. So he's got a lot of playing time now, at least under his belt, get a little bit more comfortable. And, you know, knock on wood, this team has been very healthy so far in preseason. I hate the fact that all the media people are talking about it, including myself.
Stop jinxing.
Yeah, it's like, I almost don't want to say it, but like every day, like I'm more and more thankful that we haven't had any injuries. At this point last year.
Knock on wood.
Whoops. There that goes. At this point last year, we had 7 guys on IR already.
Yeah.
You know, so that's saying something. It's a good problem to have. It's going to make the 53-man roster a little bit harder to predict and a little bit harder to cut down. But again, that's a good problem to have. And I think you and I will kind of get into that later about where we see this 53-man roster going. But yeah, offensive line looked good. The one thing that I really wanted to focus on was seeing the depth get a little bit better. You know, the first stringers play well. I wanted to see some of the replacements and some of the, you know, the guys that are going to be playing in rotation step up. And I felt like in this game, they did a good job up until probably midway through the fourth quarter. You could see some of the guys that are bubble guys that probably won't make this roster. Well, they showed why they probably won't make this roster.
Right.
You know, RG3 was kind of running for his life. But nonetheless, the guys that I think will be on this roster took a step forward. I thought the offensive line looked really good.
Yeah, no, you mentioned it. I think one of the things that everybody after the first preseason, you know, after the Hall of Fame game, mm-hmm. everybody was, oh my God, the O-line looks horrible. Well, we talked about it. You didn't have guys like Kyanda right. and Stanley in there.
Yeah.
And you mentioned something that you saw with Stanley that he made a huge difference on that line. What did see that you thought he made that huge difference?
Well, no, I mean, it just goes to show how important a left tackle is. I mean, protecting Joe's blind side, protecting Lamar's blind side.
Do you think it's having that strong left tackle, or do you think it also is veteran leadership at that position?
It's partly that. I mean, that, you know, I don't know how much verbal communication Ronnie Stanley does with the offensive lineman. I mean, he seems to be kind of a quiet kind of guy. So I don't know how he is on the football field as far as like verbal leadership. I think that comes from Yonda. And once we get that back on the field, you'll see kind of like the Ray Lewis of linebackers, the general of the offensive line. That's right. That's Yonda. That's that veteran presence that we have in him. But just putting Stanley back out there at left tackle, what that does, that solidifies the inside of your line. Now that puts Alex Lewis back to where he needs to be at left guard. Matt Skura is the one question mark that we have at center that I still think we might sign a veteran center come later.
Right. You said, you
know,
that
with the 53-man cuts, we'll see. And then, you know, Hurst and whoever else might rotate, you know, Nico Siragusa at right guard, that kind of thing. If Yonda's not out there, it just helps solidify that one person really can make a difference on the offensive line.
By the way, because you said his name, did you see the whole video and article about Siragusa getting all the comments and people thinking he actually is related to Tony Siragusa?
Oh no.
And that his wife is like worried. He said he feels bad for Tony Siragusa's wife, thinking that he's got another kid that lives across the country.
I did not see that.
That's funny. It was pretty funny.
I was one of those guys when I first heard his name when the Ravens drafted him. The first thing I did was Google search him. I'm like, any relation to Tony Siragusa? No. So okay, just
yeah, it's
very coincidental.
It is. It's fun. It's not a name you're gonna hear all the time, but so I think that's why some people. It was just funny because his reaction was, you know. It was funny. It was kind-hearted, you know, but it was he poked fun as like, man, I hope Tony's wife isn't too pissed.
Yep.
So,
yeah. So, good.
No, I think one of the things that kind of helps out, we get to see a little bit more of the offensive line. Not only do their job in protecting the quarterbacks, especially mm-hmm. Joe, But they actually helped Alex Lewis on quite a big run with some good blocking.
Alex Collins?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I say Lewis?
Sorry.
Whoops. Thinking defense already. just seeing Alex Collins get on there and helping him with a big run.
Yeah.
What did you see when you were looking at that offensive line during that block or during that run that was, you know, what set up that pivotal run as far as the blocking
is? Good schemes. Everybody was on their assignment where they were supposed to be, and then Alex Collins being Alex Collins. Look, Alex Collins is going to be exciting running back to watch this year. He's a guy that normally I stay long, far away from Ravens running backs when it comes to fantasy football. He's on my radar for, you know, a mid-round pickup for a running back. I think that he's in for maybe a 12 or 1,300-yard season as long as he stays healthy. Like I said before, I think the biggest question mark with running backs is the depth. But we did get to see a little bit more of Gus Edwards and Mark Thompson, the two undrafted guys. I liked some of what I saw with them. Edwards, he did drop a pass that was thrown basically right to him. So I didn't like that. But
right.
I did, like you talked about, shiftiness. I did see shiftiness. I did see two guys that can hit the hole and hit it hard. So I liked that. I don't know enough about them, like I said last week, to really be able to put my full trust in saying that, hey, one of these guys deserves a roster spot, especially if there's a veteran back out there come, you know, cut down time that, you know, we know their history, know their track, you know, their track record, right, that kind of thing. We'll see. But I think both of those looked pretty good. I think one of the things that I was really impressed with was the tight end play. You know, not that they made a whole lot of catches, you know, Hayden Hurst only had one catch, but it was immediate. It was one of the first throws that Flacco, you know, throws, and it was a tough, contested catch. This guy's got really good hands, and what I really saw and what I really liked is he's a good blocker.
Oh yeah.
So he's a very versatile tight end in that sense. Usually you get one or the other, you know, good pass blocker but not so great at receiving, or vice versa. This guy definitely has the ability to do both.
I mean, they didn't have pads on it at training camp, but you could tell that the scheme was there for when he was blocking. He knew his assignment, and he was being a little bit more physical than I anticipated, you know, with no pads,
right,
and able to get off guys and get open, but also block when he needed to.
Right.
We were sitting there, and there were people talking about it, you know, what they saw during the game, and, you know, that they were seeing a lot of the blocking. You know, you actually got into the conversation with the guy behind us, yeah, about it. I think it's definitely something that has been lacking at the tight end position a little bit, mm-hmm, having that big physical tight end that can not only, you know, get out there, but have that Gronk-esque, you know, mentality of, I can throw you off when I need to, but I can also get open from you and shift, you know, get the shiftiness and kind of give you that little two-step to get away from you.
Exactly.
We saw that in training camp. There was one down inside the 20 that we saw that, mm-hmm, he made this quick move and was able to get back in the back of the end zone and make a nice catch.
Yeah.
You know, definitely think he's going to be huge with that. Mark Andrews, you said you think he's going to be playing catch. He's got to play catch up a little bit.
Yeah, he's behind. I mean, he, you know, came out of training camp hurt, so he's, you know, a few days behind everybody. So what I saw out of him wasn't much in the game. You know, Lamar tried to hit him on a few plays down the middle. Now I will put a little bit of it on Lamar. Lamar overthrew him on a couple of those passes, but now he's somebody that's going to be more of just your pass catching tight end, somebody that's, you know, can get vertical, has good hands. So I like him in the passing game, but his ability to block is a work in progress. That's something that he wasn't ever asked to do at Oklahoma.
Right.
So again, and he's not a real thick body tight end, kind of built similar to Max Williams. So, you know, the ability to block, like I said, it's kind of lacking there. But I think he complements Hayden Hurst in a two tight end set kind of, you know, formation. So, you know, he's, like I said, just got to play catch up. He's got to kind of prove himself a little bit more over the next couple of weeks that, you know, the game's not too much for him and that type of thing. But I like what I've seen so far in practice, just hasn't translated to the games yet.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't talked about it yet either, but, you know, we're going to get into our roster spot. I'd be interested to hear, you know, what our listeners have to say on this and how they feel with a guy like Mark Andrews, who, like you said, is playing a little bit of catch up. Is this a guy that makes a roster? We're going to get into whether you and I think, you know, think that's, are they going to carry that many tight ends? Are they going to go that route? We'll kind of see what you and I think, but I'd love to also hear, you know, what our listeners think on that as well. So we'll be getting to that in a little bit. But one thing that you said you saw, Crabtree.
Yeah.
He looked, I did see a play that he, while you said he was lacking the speed, he did have that 30-yard reception in that game.
Right.
And it was, you know, kind of to your point, it was savvy. Do you think, you know, guys like Brown and Moore, who made big catches in that game, are going to be able to kind of, get over the hump a little bit, but do you think they're going to be able to show up enough to maybe, because they have the speed, be able to take a little bit of some playing time away from guys like Crabtree and Snead?
I don't think we'll see it'll take playing time away from Crabtree. I think that they complement each other very well. I mean, Crabtree is going to be more of your red zone threat. He's going to be the guy that's, you know, throw the jump ball, throw the ball in the back corner of the end zone kind of thing. You'll probably see somewhere in like the 900 to 1,000 yard receiving, probably double digits touchdowns, my prediction for Crabtree. I think he's that good in the red zone. I mean, this is one of the top red zone targets last year statistically.
Right.
It's something that Joe Flacco has sorely missed, really since the days of Todd Heap. He hasn't had a go-to red zone target. Well, Todd Heap and Dennis Pitta. So I'm excited for that. I think that John Brown, Chris Moore, both have looked really, really good in training camp. Chris Moore has been super impressive to me. I think where he's come from draft a few years ago to now, he's much more of a complete wide receiver, knows the route tree really well. And what I've been really impressed, for a smaller guy, he's made some really good catches in traffic, which is impressive to me. So I'm excited about Moore, and I'm excited about John Brown. I still haven't seen a whole lot out of Willie Snead yet. I was talking to a guy the other day, and I kind of worry about Willie Snead, like how much of Willie Snead's production was Drew Brees,
right,
versus it being Willie Snead. So it's still, I'm not giving up on Willie Snead by any means. It's still early. Just haven't seen anything out of him. Haven't seen the relationship there like I have with John Brown, Crabtree, and Chris Moore already.
Yeah, you're not seeing the word I like to use is you're not seeing the little bit of flair,
right?
You know, that you're kind of used to out of Snead. But I did find it interesting that they had him at mini camp or training camp. We saw him catching a lot more punt returns and kick returns than I actually had anticipated.
Yeah.
So how big of a role do you think a guy like Snead is going to play in that?
In the return game? It depends on the 53. That's all depending upon how many wide receivers they tend to carry. We'll get into that later because there's some decisions that they're going to have to make. You know, if all things stay equal and all things stay that the way that they are right now, as far as injuries go, there's going to be some really, really tough decisions. And I think that a couple of these bubble guys, if they don't end up making it, you might see Willie Snead more involved in the return game than expected.
Right.
So I think that's why they're just kind of mulling through all their options and making sure that, you know, depending upon cut day, they know who they've got available for the return game.
So, right.
It's definitely something that he's got the ability to do. Grant, Janorius Grant, kind of surprised me in this game. He made a few good returns. You can tell that this guy has that quote-unquote shiftiness. Again, you know, he has the ability to make people miss, and he's got some good speed, some good breakaway speed. He didn't return anything real far, but he returned some that should have been nothing and made it into something. So I liked what I saw in Grant. Just haven't seen a whole lot of him yet involved in the passing game. So he looks like if he's going to make this team, it's going to be as a return specialist. I was kind of disappointed because Tim White was out all of last week and including the preseason game. So I didn't get to see Tim White, and he was a guy that I'm real high on.
Right.
I'm still high on, but he's not doing himself any favors by not being on the football field, and you've got guys like Grant who are going out there and playing good.
Yeah, no, I mean, it could potentially take away a roster spot for you there.
Exactly.
So,
I think the big guy that we haven't hit on yet that all the fans were there to watch, you know, get their first in-person football game look at was obviously Lamar Jackson. And for me, he plays much better, and it makes sense, played much better early on when they left the starting offensive line out there. They left the starting offensive line out there for, I think, a drive or two with Lamar, and you could just see how much more comfortable he was in the pocket, how much just giving him that extra half a second or that extra second to think and read and react. His throws were more accurate. He wasn't grabbing the football and just running for his life. I mean, you could see how much more comfortable he was. So I liked a lot what I saw out of Lamar with the first string offensive line.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit on it. I mean, we talked about it before in the after the Hall of Fame game. Mm-hmm. He looked so awkward with the three strap drop.
Yeah,
he looked better. And I think to your point, it's a lot of that is the O line. When you know that you have the protection, mm-hmm. and you see that they just gave the protection to Joe,
it's you confidence.
You definitely feel more comfortable. You have that ability, and your first gut reaction is no longer 2-step run.
Right.
It's now 3-step look, and then if I have to run, right. I run. So exactly. It's a complete confidence change.
Yeah, and speaking of runs, one of the things that, and Lamar has even said it himself in a few interviews, is that he's been surprised with the speed of the NFL game. And, you know, that's not surprising. Most rookies come out, and that's like the first thing that they have to get adapted to, is it's a much faster game. I thought Lamar was a little faster than what I've seen. Based on what I watched in college, I thought this guy had Michael Vick type speed, and he doesn't. He has Michael Vick type agility as far as ability to make people miss, but as far as being able to get out of the pocket and beat your linebacker to the sideline and turn up field like Mike Vick could do, so far, all I've seen is Lamar try to do that, and he gets run down by linebackers, and he's getting maybe a yard of a gain or 2-yard gains coming up the sideline. You're not seeing much. Now, he did have the 9-yard run through the middle of the line when the line broke down. He made one of the defensive tackles look silly and look like he broke his ankle, and he made one of the DBs look silly as well. So, like I said, he does have that Michael Vick type of shiftiness and ability to make people miss and make people look silly. He just doesn't seem to have that game-breaking speed that I once thought he had. Like, maybe I had a little bit too high expectations on him as far as the speed goes. And maybe, again, very, very small sample size. And, you know, how hard is he really running out there?
Do you think that's maybe a result of them not wanting? Maybe that's advice from RG3. Maybe it's not. You can't go at that full bore rate, because if you do, that's where you increase the likelihood of injury. I mean,
that very well could be.
That's what my thought on it is. I agree with you. He was definitely getting, from the highlights that I saw, like I said, I didn't get a chance to watch the game because I was at Aberdeen. But I watched the highlights afterwards, and that was one thing that I did see, was the linebackers were beating him to the sideline. But I then question, like, we've seen and know that he has speed. Mm-hmm. Is he pulling it back? Has he been advised to pull it back? We don't know. We don't know what's going on there.
And like I said,
the only way we'll know is the first time that he gets in there and goes off on a run. Can he beat the guy?
Right. We're talking the second game of preseason, so I'm holding my judgments. I'm just telling you, based off of what I've seen so far, I haven't seen that game-breaking speed yet. I'm excited to see it. I hope it comes out at some point, but, you know, as of yet, I've yet to see that. RG3, on the other hand, I thought played a really good game, considering, you know, he was playing with the backup offensive line. You know, this guy gets the shit end of the stick as far as the offensive line protection goes the entire game, but played good, made some really good throws, had seemed to have a good connection with Rashad Berryman. I can't even say his name. It's hard to say his name.
We'll just call him BP from now.
Yeah, BP. Look, I'm not going to get overexcited about a couple of catches that Rashad Berryman made, but, I mean, he did have a hell of a catch in the end zone from a hell of a throw by RG3 in the back corner of the end zone. But if I still think if Breshad Perriman wants to make this roster, he needs to put the rest of that type of a performance for the remaining three preseason of the games, that we got together.
Let's remember who Breshad Perriman was playing against, too.
Exactly.
He's playing against the backup defense, the backup safeties, the backup one. It ain't. I could care less. It's the equivalent of a guy that played college football, didn't make it to the NFL, going out and playing in a scrap league. That's what it looks like.
I'd love to hear from the listeners out there. What do you guys think of Breshad Perriman? Do you think Breshad Perriman has a better chance at making this roster now after that performance, or no? Just interested to see what you guys think, but I sure hope not. You mentioned defense, and that was something that I was thoroughly impressed with in this game, top to bottom. The Ravens played a hell of a game defensively.
Hell yeah, they did. They. I think you mentioned it. We saw it. Tim Williams has slimmed down.
Yeah, I think he was playing close to almost 280 last year. I think they said he was around like 275, 278 last year, and he's down below 250 now. He's down to like 248, and you can see
the frame.
Yeah, just how much quicker he is off the line, how much easier it is for him to get around the edge and get around the tackles. He was in the backfield wrecking havoc pretty much every snap that he was out there. He was able to get the one big sack, which ended up being a forced fumble, which was pretty. I think he's going to be a good situational type pass rusher. You know, he won't be a three down, linebacker out right there, but he will be a good situational pass rusher, I think, for us. You know, that was his bread and butter at Alabama, was his ability to get after the right quarterback. Last year, we see, I think that weight maybe played a part in his ability to get off the line and get out of the grasps of a tackle. I think the slimmer down version of him is definitely going to help him.
Yeah, no, it definitely will. The other guy that kind of really stood out in that was Matt Judon.
Yeah.
We've seen glimpses in the past of Judon's abilities. Mm-hmm. He really kind of showed them off in this game. And I think, to your point, we need him to play that at that level all the time.
Yeah.
You know, we need him to make that next step play at that level.
He needs to take the next step. I want to see him lead this team in sacks. He absolutely has all the intangibles to do it. He has a side, his size, he has the speeds, he has the smarts. He can do it. He just needs to put it all together. And he played a good couple drives there when they used him early on. He had the sack on the first drive of the game. Good to see him. Just he needs to keep that consistent, keep that level of intensity consistent through every game, all 16 games, and hopefully into the playoffs. One thing that I was really impressed defensively with was the DB play. Kennedy, obviously, he had the big play of the game with the one-handed interception on a play that when I was watching it from up top of my seat, I thought, oh, shit, there goes a touchdown. There's no way. And then Kennedy, literally jumped out of nowhere to pick that ball off. Read it very well. Kennedy's a guy that I really wasn't that high on coming out of college last year, and proved me wrong, played really, really well, and has improved, I think, so far through training camp. He's a guy that I think adds some really good depth to this DB backfield.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. You can't deny the way he played in that game.
Right.
I think he could be a potential, potential threat on the team if he keeps it up.
Yep.
He's got to keep it up, though.
And Deshaun Elliott, the rookie out of Texas, this guy continues to impress. I know this is a guy that you were kind of high on coming out of the draft, and you've been high on in watching him in practice and whatnot.
I was hoping to see him hit somebody in practice, and then because you said it happened the last time. I was like, somebody in practice, and then Harbaugh go off on him. But
I think Harbaugh spanked him hard enough to know not to do that again during practice when he's not supposed to. But he plays with that Bernard Pollard type intensity. We've mentioned that before. He's got that hard hitting type personality. He's played really, really well on special teams, which is all going to help him in not just solidifying his spot on this roster, but just getting him on the field more and more. He's a guy that can get down the field and make open field tackles on special teams, which is huge. So I really like what I've seen out of him so far. I'm surprised a guy that's played this well dropped that far in the draft.
Yeah, no, I don't. I think, like you said, I was high on him when the draft hit. I thought he was a good fit for the Ravens. We needed somebody that could come in with a little bit more speed. You and I discussed, he can drop back in coverage. We wanted to see him, you know, step up and get into the gap a little bit more. I think he played well enough to show, even on special teams, that he's a fit for this team. So,
two guys that I want to get your opinions on, and I'm asking you this because I have my opinion already. Max Williams and Kenneth Dixon. Two guys that the Ravens, one, I can't remember, Kenneth Dixon, maybe he was a third-round pick, fourth-round pick, I can't remember for sure. Max Williams was a second-round pick that we traded up before Pittsburgh to get. Both still very young guys, but just cannot stay on the football field.
No.
You know, and I was really high on Kenneth Dixon, and I was really high on Max Williams. I was excited about the Max Williams pick. Is it too early in their careers to give up on them? I mean, when you're talking a 53-man roster, and in each roster spot being super important, Max Williams being a tight end, and you just drafted two tight ends in this draft, he's still only 23 years old, so still super young. But youth only gets you so much. Talent only gets you so much if you can't be on the football field and you can't be healthy. What's your opinion on them?
On Max Williams, yeah, to me, it's not worth the time, especially when you have guys that in their first year step up, are healthy. Could he be on a practice squad? Maybe, but he's going to get scooped up. I was going to say, he gets scooped up too quick to even, you know, keep him on the practice squad. But for me, I think Dixon is a guy that's going to make the team. Mm. I think he has a greater potential. And I don't know the ins and outs of Collins' contract.
Right.
Maybe he's your after Collins kind of backup plan.
I don't know if he's the after Collins. They're both about the same age, maybe a year or two difference. So I don't think that they're one supplants the other as far as when their career is over type thing. I think they could be a good complementary, you know, backs to each other for a long time.
I'm saying that, though, in that if Collins has another year like he did last year, come contract time, I don't know the details of his contract, but when his contract comes up, you either got to get an extension done on him or you're going to see him potentially go elsewhere.
So you're I'm thinking
if Collins continues to play at the level that he's playing, continues to grow, continues to get better, I think he's a guy that could wind up going and signing somewhere else. Okay, and you're going to need a guy that you can semi-depend on. So for him to sit back on the sidelines a little bit and let Collins take that role and have Dixon stay healthy, let him and Allen get out there and do a lot of the runs, maybe put him in every once in a while. If Collins goes down, you got a decent, solid backup. You've already, you know, the tight end side of things, when I mentioned Max Williams, you've already got 3, 4, potentially 5 tight ends, not including Williams, that could be making this team.
Right.
I don't think we're going to carry that many, but you don't need the overflow at that position as much as you may need it at running back.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still on the fence with this whole thing. Like, you know, I don't want to turn the card in on either one of these guys because they are so young. But at the end of the day, when you really sit down and think about it, what have they done for this team? And they haven't. They haven't done much of anything. Max Williams has shown flashes when he's been healthy, but to me, he's almost been like a piece of glass. Like, this guy just, he seems to get hurt.
It's literally a flash in the pan and then he's gone.
Yeah, it's injury after injury after injury. And it's just, when does it end? When does it end? When does he stay on the football field? And same thing with Kenneth Dixon. Now, Kenneth Dixon's coming off of a serious knee injury. Now, it's going to take some time to bounce back from that. But what disappointed me is that, you know, when you're rehabbing a knee, or when you're rehabbing any kind of major you know, injury like that, you do what you, especially as a professional athlete, you do what you can to keep your body in tip-top shape, because you know you're not going through the grinds of practice. You know you're not going through the grinds of games and that kind of thing. So you do what you can do otherwise to try to keep your body in good shape. And he came in the training camp out of shape, which to me just shows lack of drive, you know, lack of want to. So I'm kind of on the fence. I think that if there's a chance to sign a more proven back come cut time, I'd be okay with letting go of Dixon. From a number standpoint and from what we have currently on the roster,
I could see that.
But, you know, like I said, I think when it comes down to 53, if there's somebody available, we go.
Oh yeah, you have to go. If there's somebody more proven out there at the position, you have to. There's no ifs, ands, or buts.
Well, speaking of the roster and speaking of the 53 specifically, you and I had a chance today to kind of look at the 90-man roster as it sits right now, including everybody that's on the PUP list and all of that. I went through and I picked my 53. Now, preference of this is if no injuries happen from here on out. This is if the Ravens don't cut any of these guys and don't sign any other, you know, free agents. If we had to pick a 53-man roster from what we have right now, who would those players be? If you want, I can start. If you want to go, you can.
How you
go.
Want to? Are we running through the entire roster, or are we just?
All right, so I'll start, and I'll just kind of show you what I did with mine. So I had. It's a 53-man roster. Obviously, 46 of those 53 start on a game day, you know, are actually active during game day. I had 40, I believe. 40 I went through really quickly that are pretty much no-brainer guarantee players. And I'll go down those lists real quick. Obviously, Joe Flacco, Lamar Jackson at the quarterbacks, not a question. Both of those guys are making the team. From wide receiver standpoint, we're just going to go simple four on there. We've got Crabtree, Snead, John Brown, and Chris Moore. We know those four guarantees to lock to make the roster. Running backs and fullback, we know Alex Collins, Javorius Allen, Buck Allen, and Pat Ricard. We know those three guys are locks to make this roster. Tight ends, Hayden Hurst, Nick Boyle, Mark Andrews, those are three guys that I've got as locks that are going to definitely make the roster. Offensive line, pretty much all the starters. We're going to go Matt Skura here, Alex Lewis, Marshall Yanda, James Hurst, Orlando Brown, Ronnie Stanley. Those are your six guys there that are guaranteed offensive linemen to make the roster. Secondary DBs, I have Deshaun Elliott, Jimmy Smith, Tony Jefferson, Tavon Young, Maurice Kanade, Marlon Humphrey, Eric Weddle, Anthony Levine. All guaranteed locks to make the roster. Linebackers. Kenny Young. Patrick Onwasser. Tyus Bowser. Terrell Suggs. CJ Mosley. Za'Darius Smith. Matt Judon. All guaranteed to make the roster. Defensive line. Willie Henry, Brent Urban, Michael Pierce, Brandon Williams, all guaranteed to make the line. Specialist, what do they call it, the Wolfpack? Sam Koch, Justin Tucker, Morgan Cox. Those three guys make the roster. No questions, no ifs, ands, or buts. Do you agree with me on them? Was there anything
on
there?
I was pretty well the same. There was a few guys that I had switched.
Okay. Now I went into my kind of questionable guys and who I think personally are going to make this roster. So there was 40. I went through 40 of them. Now I'm going to give you the last 13 that I think make this roster and why. We'll start with quarterback. Robert Griffin makes this roster. I think RG3 makes this roster. This is the one year that the Ravens carry three quarterbacks. And for a couple reasons. One, if Flacco's gone next season, they have to have a backup in place for Lamar. And
we got to remember, you got to sign RG3 next year if you're going to do that.
I get that. But he's already, he's a guy that super thankful, super grateful for the opportunity that the Ravens have given him. Now, if another team were to come calling about the possibility of him being a starter somewhere, maybe we lose him there. But I think if it's a backup to backup offer from one team to the other, I think the Ravens have the inner lead for that, you know, signing right, of him, because of the opportunity that they've given him. Wide receivers, last year they only carried 5 wide receivers on the squad going into the year. I think this year they go into the season with 6, possibly 7, but I'm going with 6 for my 53. The other guys that I have making this roster, Jordan Lasley and Jaleel Scott, the 2 draft picks from this year. I can't see them. One, they're not going to just cut a draft pick from this year. 2, there's no way they go on the practice squad because those guys will be gobbled up too fast. So I can't see them not having those guys.
You said
guys.
Lasley and Scott, right?
Lasley and Scott.
They were on mine. The only one that I have different in that category. They're not going to let him go. Rashad Perryman.
So you
actually had 8.
7?
I had 8 total.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I had it deep.
We'll get to yours in a second because I want to see where you're thin then. Running backs and fullbacks. I did give Kenneth Dixon the nod only because we don't know who those veteran backs are going to be that are going to be available, and it would leave this position way too thin not to carry Kenneth Dixon. So I have him making the roster. Tight ends. I have them carrying 4. They carried 4 last year. I have them carrying 4 again this year. Hayden Hurst, Nick Boyle, Mark Andrews, and then I do have Max Williams making the squad. I don't see Darren Waller making the squad. He had the year-long suspension. I know he's looked good so far in camp, and people are excited about him. I just can't see him making the roster. And Vince Maley, even though he does provide, you know, a little bit of special teams and, you know, he's good as far as in the blocking game and all that stuff, I just don't see a spot for him. So I don't see him making the roster. Offensive linemen, we carried 8 in 2017. I have us carrying 8 this year. I went down the list of my 6. The other 2 that I have them carrying, Nico Siragusa and Jermaine Aluminum, we're going to call him. Aluminor, I have. So those are my 2 extra offensive linemen that I have there. Defensive backs, we carry. This is where I'm a little thin because I'm over 1 on the quarterbacks and over 1 on the wide receivers from where we were last year. I have to take those 2 positions from somewhere. I take 1 from DBs. Last year we carried 11. I have us carrying 10. I think the last couple that are going to make the squad, I have Anthony Averett, the rookie out of Alabama, and I only think that because if you put him on the practice squad again, somebody's going to scoop him up. Chuck Clark, and only because he's played his way on this team. I mean, he's done really, really well in the absence of Tony Jefferson. He's looked good.
Yeah.
So I think he makes this roster. The one guy that I cut off the list, and I think it's just going to be a numbers game with him, is Brandon Carr. I don't think Brandon Carr makes this roster. I think the amount of money that he makes, this saves a little bit of money for the Ravens by cutting him. And, you know, getting Tavon Young back, basically, and the emergence of Marlon Humphrey playing like a first-round draft pick last year and having the expectations of him and Jimmy Smith pairing up as the 1-2s, and then getting Tavon Young back from the injury, and he's looked good so far in camp. I just don't see the Ravens carrying Brandon Carr. I think that's where, you know, we lose a spot there. Linebackers, we carried 9 last year. I have us carrying 9 as well. I went down the list of who I've got. The 2 guys that I have on top of them, Tim Williams, just because I've been super impressed with him as a pass rusher, and I have Albert McClellan making the team. I don't see a spot for Kamale Correa. I think he'll be signed elsewhere, but I do not see him making this roster. Defensive line, this is also where I thinned out us 1 spot to balance the roster. We were carrying 7 last year. I think we carry 6 going into this year. The 2 other guys that I have making the roster, Carl Davis and Chris Wormley. The one guy that was on the roster last year, I don't think makes the team this year, is Bronson Cafusi. Just haven't seen enough out of him to earn a roster spot. Now, again, you have to remember a lot of these things could change just based on injuries. Some guys are going to get an opportunity because of injuries. But if things ended the way they were right now, with the roster being what it is right now, I think those guys make the roster. My 10 guys, really quickly, my 10 guys that go to the practice squad, how long they'll be there, I don't know. My 10 guys, two wide receivers, Tim White, which it was so hard not to put him on this roster. You know how much of a fan I am of him. And Janarian Grant, those are the two wide receivers. I have Gus Edwards and Mark Thompson, both running backs, going to the practice squad. Nick Kizer, the tight end, I've been impressed with him so far in training camp. I think he goes to the practice squad. Offensive lineman, Greg Sinnott. I think even though he was a draft pick this year, he's still a project, so it's safe to put him on the offensive line because I don't think anybody will scoop him up fast enough. He does have the size. He does have some ability, but he's a project.
Yeah.
Needs some work. I also have Bradley Bosman, the center that we took in the draft this year. I think he'll be on the practice squad. Defensive backs, the one guy I have defensive back-wise in the practice squad is John Baptiste. He's been kind of hit or miss. He's had some good plays, and he's had some plays where he's gotten burnt. Defensive line, I've got Miles Humphrey. I've been really impressed with him, especially on special teams. And Zach Zeiler, the seventh round pick this year, the defensive tackle, shows some promise. He's still kind of a raw talent, but there it is. That's my 10 practice squad guys.
I didn't do practice squad guys, but quick rundown. Quarterbacks, I had RG3. I had Joe Flacco. I had Lamar. Wide receivers, my locks were Moore, Brown, Crabtree, Snead, and I had White as a lock.
Okay. Like I said, it was hard for me not to put him on.
My bubble guys that I think they're going to make it at the last second were Lazley, Scott, and Perriman.
Okay.
I just, with everything we've seen with Perriman, with everything, I think they're just going to go, oh, he's starting to catch the ball, and they're going to keep him.
So you've got them carrying eight.
Got them carrying eight wide receivers.
That's a big jump. They carried five last year. They're carrying three more. That means you're leaving them really thin elsewhere.
Problem is, if you have a Michael Crabtree go down, is Jordan Lasley or Jaleel Scott going to be able to step up?
I'm catching what you're throwing. Yeah. I get it. I just want to see where we got the
running backs. I had Collins, Allen, Ricard, and I had Dixon making.
Okay, so we're the same there.
Yeah. Tight ends, this is where I went a little thinner. I only think three tight ends.
Okay.
I think it's going to be Hurst, Boyle, and Andrews.
Okay.
Could Waller, in my opinion, Waller could be a bubble guy that if you want to carry seven wide receivers or six, Waller's making the team at that point.
Okay.
If you're going to have that set. Offensive line, I had Siragusa, Skura, Illuminora, Alex Lewis, Yanda, Hurst, Zeus, Stanley, and I had Bozeman.
Okay, so Bozeman is the only guy that we're different there. I had him on the practice squad. You have him making it.
Yeah, I have him making it. I think you need a backup.
Woo! You must be thin on the defensive side of the football. Let's see.
A little bit. So secondary, this is where we do vary a little bit. I've got the locks in Weddle, Humphrey, Levine, Jefferson, Smith. The guys that I said I think could wind up being a lock, Deshaun Elliott, the way he's playing. I did have Brandon Carr just because of the history with the team.
Okay.
He's got a history with the team. They know they can somewhat depend on him, to show up at least.
Okay. He's a veteran.
Yeah. I had Tavon Young making the team. And I also had Chuck Clark making the team.
So you do not have Kennedy?
I do not have Kennedy.
You don't have Averett?
Nope.
And you don't have Anthony Levine?
I have Anthony Levine. Levine. Okay. Yeah, I thought I said Weddle Levine. So yeah, I have Levine, but I don't have Averett or Kennedy. I think I see more out of Young than I do Kennedy.
No, I agree. I have them both. I have them both on mine. But I mean, you got to rob Peter to pay Paul. If you want to carry that many wide receivers, you got to take it from somewhere. So yeah. I get it. I understand.
And then linebackers, Anwasor, Bowser, Suggs, Mosley, Zadarius Smith, Judon. I did have Tim Williams as being a lock.
Okay.
I think his slimming down shows me he's serious, and I think the Ravens know that too.
Okay.
I did also see them bringing on Kenny Young.
Okay.
And I did see them bring on Correa with the way he played. He's got to keep it up. If he keep it,
so you have
if
Correa
I'm in
it, over McClellan?
Yeah.
All right, so you have nine linebackers as well, is that right?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys, yep.
Okay, so we're the same there. We just flip-flopped on McClellan and Correa, and I was the same way. Yeah, I was between the two of them as to which one I was going to carry. I
figured I went with the guy, like, you know, I went with Carr, who was more, you know, of a team guy. So right. McClellan, I was like, yeah, all right, let's give the kid a shot in Correa. Defensive line, I had Henry, I had Wormley, I had Urban, Pierce, and Williams. So I think you said you had
say it again.
Henry.
Yep.
Wormley.
Yep.
Urban.
Okay.
Pierce.
Yep.
Williams.
So we're missing Carl Davis.
That's the only one.
And yeah, I can see he's been question mark. He actually might end up being trade bait.
Could be.
Kind of like a...
There's a few of these guys on this team that could wind up being traded.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. God, what's the guy that we traded to the Eagles last year? I can't think of his name right now. Jernigan. He could end up being another trade piece like we did with Jernigan last year. So we'll see.
Yeah. And then obviously the locks in Cook, Tucker, and Cox.
Okay.
Vitovic, that's trade bait.
Oh, yeah. That'll definitely
be
trade bait. Down the line, that guy's unreal in his ability to be able to do both the punt and kick.
I know I've heard a few people, including a group that we're on Twitter, that's kind of been high on him and, you know, drop Cook, drop Tucker. Yeah, they weren't serious about it, but at the same time, there have been fans that have been calling for that because you save a roster position. Here's the problem when you do that, though. Who are you going to have kick?
Right. No, that's
true. He gets hurt, he goes down. You got to get somebody that needs a kicker. Somebody's going to be willing to pick him up with some of these kicks that he can hit. You know, he can hit the deep ball,
right?
And somebody's going to look to pick him up when it comes down to that. So we had some slight variances, but for the most part, you know, I think we're pretty in line with each other. You know, both of us robbing Peter to pay Paul on most of them.
Yeah, no, exactly. Now, did you have them carrying three quarterbacks, or did you only have them?
No, I had three quarterbacks.
So you did have him carrying RG3.
Yeah, I had okay. him. I think that was a lock.
Okay.
It's if anything, it's $1 million for mentorship for Lamar, period.
All right.
It's $1 million investment into your potential multi-$1 million investment.
Fair enough.
So.
It's time for a social media shout out.
What's up?
Facebook, we see you, James. We see you, Karen. We see you, Jamie. We see you, Joe. And we see you, Tom. Appreciate each and every one of you tuning in.
We have some more.
Don't see any own questions Facebook.
Not a lot of questions today. Yeah, there's some people. I got Mike, Ryan, Jen, Matt, Justin, Jamie. Everybody kind of
appreciate you guys tuning in. I don't know why. You must have a different list than I do.
I think it only gives you the list of like your friends versus my friends versus
very many friends. Apparently,
friend needs friends, guys.
What do we got going on YouTube?
YouTube has been quiet. We have a lot. We have several listeners that have been in and out, but nobody's commenting. Guys, give us a shout. Tell us what you think. We want to hear from you. Everybody's quiet today. They love what we're saying. That's all.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is.
We're gonna go with it. Hey, there's been plenty of people listening on both sides. So
we appreciate each and every one of you as always every week.
Yeah, don't forget like, share. You know, please don't hesitate to comment. We love to include you guys in the show. It's been quiet today, but I mean, there's been plenty of people in and out and watching. So you know, definitely share it and put your comments down. I got to get into this. The Orioles.
Yes, sir.
1-6 since last week, including this weekend, a 4-game sweep.
Yeah.
We just had Troy on YouTube chime in and says he's on the tube.
Appreciate it, Troy.
Yeah.
We'll see you Saturday.
Yeah. 4-game sweep by Boston.
Right.
They had their only good game, I'll call it a good game, and we still lost, was the 12-19 loss on Friday. We had 17 hits in that game.
Yeah.
The team looked, production-wise, good. You just got out-produced.
Yeah. It was a... wild game, to say the least. You know, I saw a stat the other day about Buck Showalter that I thought was kind of interesting and kind of telling as to how just how bad this season in particular has been. Buck Showalter's been with the team now for 8 seasons. He was 53 games over 500 for his career with the team going into this year. He's now 3 games away from being 500 for his career. It's just, I mean, it's sad. It goes to, you know, goes to show how one awful year like this can really turn the tide on what someone has meant and someone has done to an organization, especially from a managerial standpoint.
Yeah.
And I've always been a big Buck Showalter fan, and we've talked about this in previous episodes. I think one of the things that it's hard with Buck, I don't know what it is about him, but his track record speaks to this type of production everywhere he goes. He comes in and people follow him like he is their drill sergeant, like he is their leader. They buy into his program and he does an amazing job at turning a franchise around.
He just needs to stop there.
Putting a winner on the... But then it's like... It's after year 4, after year 5. I don't know if the message just goes sour, if it's, you know, maybe people taking advantage of him, or I don't know what it is, but it's just it's like Buck Showalter comes with an expiration date. You understand what I'm saying? Like he's good.
His milk goes sour.
That jug of milk is good until 1 week past that expiration date, and then yuck.
Yeah.
Don't touch it. I mean, that's how I feel about Buck Showalter. That's been the story of this guy's career.
I've always said I like the move that they made to get Buck. I think it was a change that they needed in the clubhouse, and obviously it worked. But I think at the same time, it's one of those things that you have to look at it and go, you did that there. You did that in Arizona. You did it in New York. You're doing it here. Like, does Buck, like, what is it? Does he get tired of it? Do the players get tired of it?
I don't know what it is. I really don't think, because Buck doesn't, when you listen to him, he doesn't sound like a manager that's just packed it in for the year or given up on anything. I mean, he's still the same Buck Showalter, whether he's 15 games above 500 or he's whatever we are now, 50 games below 500 at this point.
Speaking of packing it in, you might as well, because we are out of it at this point. This is the earliest we've ever been out of it. And I think it's one of the earliest any team has ever been out of it.
It's crazy.
It's horrible.
Can we talk about something positive?
Well, all right. So when it comes to positive, this is going to sound like it's not positive. Okay. But in my eyes, it is. Bundy got rocked for 8 runs in that game on Friday.
Yeah.
But on that 8 runs, 8 hits through 5. Not horrible considering what you had happen.
Okay.
4 walks. That's what got Bundy in trouble.
Yeah.
Was the 4 walks. The O's did push Eovaldi out of the game after 2 2/3.
Yeah, no, I mean, we were hitting.
They rocked them for eight runs on 10 hits, but 4 were unearned.
Yeah.
4 of those 8 runs were unearned. So it's kind of like it's a double-edged sword. It was good, but it was only good because of this.
I think the thing that worries me with Bundy is we're seeing a pretty rapid decrease in his velocity. For a guy his age, coming off the injury that he's come off of, you know, this is a guy that when we drafted him out of high school was hitting 99, 100 mile an hour. Yeah. In high school. And here he is now, what, 24, maybe 25 at this point. I can't remember exactly how old he is. But either way, he's in the low 90s.
Yeah.
And
he's barely touching 95 most of the time.
He doesn't have enough movement on his fastball to blow it by you with a 90, 92 mile an hour fastball. And that's what we're seeing, is we're seeing these guys catch up to him. He's lost a little bit of command on his secondary pitches. His curveball seems to find the middle of the plate more and more often. You know, we saw it just go real quickly. I saw an article the other day that the Atlanta Braves had made a slight adjustment in Kevin Gausman's placement on the mound. We're talking like an inch or two and where he stands on the mound. Then he went out and threw seven innings, eight innings, five hits, only gave up one run. Not to say that he hasn't done that here in the past. I mean, he's had those kind of games here in the past, but we'll see. We'll see, you know, for the rest of the year how he does, if that little bit of an adjustment makes a big difference. I know you have a strong opinion about the development of pitchers in this organization, and I'm hoping that upper management isn't as blind to it, you know, as some people can be, and hopefully that part of this investment into coaching and player development starts with pitching.
Are they blind to it? Do polar bears shit on ice? Yes, they do. They are blind to it at this point. We talked about it before. I'm not going to rehash it. But if you're going to truly consider this a rebuild, you have to revamp everything. You can't have these guys that you got, all these prospects that you got from these teams, all these touted prospects, you can't have them just turn around and go into a broken farm system that's going to teach them, in my opinion, the wrong way.
Right.
Because every time a guy goes to our farm system, he gets up and he struggles. He looks good for a year, maybe a year and a half, maybe two, and then starts falling off.
Yeah.
We saw it with Arrieta. We saw it with Tillman. We started to see bits and pieces of it with Gausman. He started to turn around this year, but last year wasn't exactly the greatest year in the world for him.
Not at all.
And now we're kind of starting to see it with Bundy. I hate that because you know what I said at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And I hate this right now because I said, and I'll go back and I'll say it again, I said that Bundy was going to have a sub 2 ERA, a Cy Young type year. And he started off that way.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. I don't know if Alan Mills made an adjustment. I don't know if Buck made an adjustment or if it's just Bundy. But he has kind of fallen off the table, especially here after the All-Star break. He started just before the All-Star break to kind of fall apart. He's really fallen apart now. I don't know what it is, but it's a broken system, and you've got to redo the system. You have to take the pieces out. You got to take the screws apart and put it back together, and you know, with new parts kind of thing. But you know, talking back to the game for a second, there was a play that I need to talk about, and I need to vent for a second.
Okay.
The play with Davis and Joseph, double play, ground ball to Davis, bases loaded. There's two ways you handle this. You either throw the ball to home plate and then have Joseph throw the ball to third or throw it to first to get the double play. Or you step on first base and you throw it home to Joseph and he tags the guy out at the plate, double play. Those are your choices. What does Davis do? Davis makes a step, actually two steps when you go back and look at it, towards first base, makes this like jump throw out towards second base, throwing home. Joseph catches it. He's touching the plate, but he comes off the plate after catching it and tags him out because he thought Davis stepped on first. And the guy was dancing around to give the guy going running to first time. And it worked. We got one out. It should have been two. People are yelling at Joseph for the fact that he didn't see Davis didn't touch the bag. It's Davis's fault. You made the motion. You made the move. You made not only just one step, but two steps towards that bag to then throw it. And you didn't do it. All on Davis. That double play is all on Davis. And the runs that came after that are all on Davis. There were four runs after that play that went through.
Did you ever play Little League Baseball? And you had that one guy that was like in the outfield counting birds, watching like butterflies.
Yeah.
Not paying attention to like what was going on during the game. That's almost what I felt like happened there on Davis. It was like the guy hit the ball to him. He's like, oh, I forgot I was playing baseball. And he picked up the ball and lost total track of like what he was doing because there was his body carried him. Because of the way where the ball was hit, his body carried him towards the bag. But if you really watch that play, it was like he never from the get-go never had intentions of
throwing home
of attempting to step on the bag at first base. He just committed right away to throwing the ball home and getting the out at home. and not trying to pick up the double play.
See, I didn't see that. His motion to me, he took two steps towards that bag, and then he jumped out of the line, of the baseline. When you watch that play, he jumps out of the baseline off of 1 foot, throwing that ball to home, which is why Joseph thought he stepped on the bag. Because he was literally within, I want to say, 2 feet of the bag.
Right.
Like, all he had to do was, when he did it, just take one step and throw.
You learn that. That's one of the things. I mean, I played a little bit of first base when I played as well. Like, and one of the things that you learn when you have to make a play at the plate, if you've got bases loaded, you step on the outside of the bag in foul territory and come off the bag to the left, if you're running towards the bag, to the left side, and come home with your throw. That way you've got a direct line of sight to the catcher. You're not throwing directly at the runner. And if the runner comes out of the baseline and gets in the way, well, then that's runner interference. You're taught that.
Not in foul territory. It's not. You don't step in foul territory on that play because you have to throw it. Caleb, if you're in foul territory on that play, Caleb has to catch that across his body and throw it there because your angle isn't going to be right on unless you're throwing it right on to Caleb's left side and catching it right where the runner is. It's not going to happen. Because the only runner interference happens is when the runner is in fair territory or on the line. Okay. So that's where Davis, he made the right move in stepping off and throwing in. But the problem is on a play like that, you have to do one of two things. You have to either know that you're going to get the out and immediately throw it. Or if the ball is coming to you, you have to know, I'm immediately throwing this home and getting it back.
Right.
That's the way that you got to handle it. So it's got to be one of those two ways to handle it, and it's got to. He didn't handle it properly, so that came on him. On the positive side, though, in this game, Adam Jones making his debut in right field went 3 for 5 with 2 RBIs and a stolen base.
Yeah,
he got on, and it was my dad and I were sitting there watching it, going. He did that to show up them bringing up somebody to take his place and to take center field. He's saying, I can keep up with these kids. You don't think I still got the speed? I'm going to steal the bag. That was kind of the attitude. And you saw when he popped up, he looked in the dugout like, that's right. I can still run. Like, that was his demeanor.
Right.
But, you know, it was nice to see him. But I think a good portion of that is your boy. Yeah. Seti Mulls, stepping it up, goes 3 for 4 with a walk, 2 RBIs, and 2 doubles.
Yep. It was just a cool experience. You know, this guy, a lot of people have been high on Cedric Mullins now for the past couple of months. This is a guy I have been clamoring for the past year, maybe even a little bit more than a year. But to see him finally get the call up on Friday, it all started with, you know, Adam Jones kind of pushing him out the dugout to lead the team out onto the field, which was kind of a cool thing. If you go back and watch the video, it's, you know, every little kid's dream, you know, to run out on a big league field and all that. And he, you know, Adam Jones, the veteran, is kind of guiding him to do so. It was cool to see that. Like you said, I mean, it was a wacky game, 19-12, almost like a football score in a lot of ways. But yeah, so 3 for 4, he had the 2 doubles, a single, a walk, 3 runs scored and 2 RBIs. He's the first Oriole in their history to debut with 3 hits. That's pretty impressive considering how long this organization, this franchise has been around. For him to be the first one to do it, it's a pretty impressive mark.
Damn impressive.
So impressive that he now has more 3-hit games on the season than Chris Davis. Yep, that's right.
Oh, my God.
In one game, Cedric Mullins has more 3-hit games than Chris Davis does all year. kind of crazy. But yeah, and then another thing, like I said, it's things that they make books about, man. Adam Jones, the guy who steps over and kind of opens the door for this guy to come up, takes it, you know, it's been what's our center fielder for the last 11 years now, moves over to right field. And then Adam Jones is the guy that drives him in to score his first Major League Baseball run, kind of cool. And you really saw, and I know you were at the game, you know, TV sometimes don't really get a feel for the speed, but scoring from second on that Adam Jones hit, there's nobody else on this roster that could have done that.
No.
And these are the types of things that I was so high on Cedric Mullins about. There's a lot of his game that reminds me of Brian Roberts, just talking about the offensive side of the game. Obviously, they're both smaller in stature kind of guys, but you and I had talked about this before, about him being what was once considered the prototypical type leadoff hitter. Maybe that's changed, maybe that's evolved over the years, but he is still, in my eyes, what I consider your prototypical type of leadoff hitter. He's a guy that can work the count. He can foul pitches off, which is going to make a pitcher's pitch count go up, which is what you want. He's a guy that's a high on base percentage guy. He's got a really good eye. He's a switch hitter, which Brian Roberts was as well. He's got deceptive pop. You know, Brian Roberts, again, for a smaller guy, had a decent amount of pop in his bat, and Cedric kind of has that same thing. You're going to see a lot of doubles out of this guy. I mean, obviously, he already had two in his first game. And that speed, that game-changing speed, like, that's just something that this team has not had in a very, very long time.
No, they haven't. It's also the weekend that Brian Roberts goes into the Orioles Hall of Fame.
That's exactly right.
And, you know, so to see this guy come up, you know, and do what he did, it definitely is a route that you want to see him go down. You'd love to see him stay with this team. You know, he's learning from, you know, one of the greats in Adam Jones. You know, not only just a great Oriole, but a great baseball player. I still think it's debatable of Adam Jones being a Hall of Famer, but he is still a great baseball player. And the fact is, he's coming up. I don't know if you saw the picture today the Baltimore Orioles posted, you know, learning from the best. And it's just right. A picture of him and Cedric coming, you know, walking out of the outfield, you know, off the first base side. And it's just picture them just kind of like looking and talking. And you can tell it's intent. Adam's got an intent conversation going with him.
Right.
You can see the conversation happen a lot. You know, there is still some communication that's there, not only just from a leadership perspective, but, you know, you and I talked about it. You texted me right after it happened. There was a play out in left center where Mullins had it.
Oh, yeah, he had it.
He had it all day. Yeah, he had it all day. Hits off his glove, but he pulls his glove back and pauses his glove from fully extending because Mancini's coming in. Maybe some of that is Mancini saying.
Well, some of it is learning the voice, too.
Yeah, you know, no, absolutely.
Mancini's only used to one voice in center field calling, "I got it, I got it, I got it." How many fans in the stands?
Oh, I got it.
And how do you depict? So it's a learning curve with them. But yeah, that's a ball that Adam would have never gotten to.
No, absolutely not. I mean, it was deep. Adam would have played that off the wall or let Mancini go after it and then played it off the wall. Right. So I think that's the thing, is you got two young guys that are driven out there in the outfield and are wanting to make a play. Mancini has made plenty of plays, you know, especially ones at the wall.
Still think of him as a future first baseman. I do not see him staying in the outfield.
He shouldn't be your long-term fix in the outfield.
No.
But at the same time, you know, you do have to, you're locked up with Davis.
Yeah.
And the only way that you move Davis is to move Trumbo, because you're more locked up on Davis than you are Trumbo. So it's move Trumbo somehow, some way, or you're waiting and then you build it over.
I still think Davis has got 1 year left. I think that the club is so invested into him financially that they can't make the move yet to cut bait. I think they give him one more season to either turn it around and figure it out. Then by the end of next year,
you really think they'd cut that much salary?
I do, because they're going through this rebuild process for the next couple of years anyway, right? You don't want a guy. I understand you're going to have to pay him regardless, right? So there's no getting around the money. Why have a guy blocking the future growth of your team if you got to pay him anyway? And he's only hitting 160. He's not helping your team in any kind of way. Anybody could hit 160 and hit 15 to 20 home runs.
I'll go out there.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. Anybody can do that. So why, if you got to pay this guy regardless, why have him block somebody from coming up and learning at the major league level and try to expedite this rebuild process, I think the smarter move would be to cut bait next year at some point, cut bait, move Mancini to first, and start developing another young outfielder, whether that be Austin Hayes, or if they do bring in a Victor Mesa through the, you know, the international process, whoever it may be, start developing your younger outfielders and get rid of Chris Davis. I'm just done with him.
I have to share this because this came across on YouTube. D-Bag says his Twitch name is Fred's Goatee.
Nice. I love it. Sharp goatee.
There you go. I had to share that because it came across and it made me laugh. People are going to be like, what the hell is he laughing for?
I appreciate the follow there, D-Bag.
So we talk about these young guys coming up. You know, there's several young guys that we've talked about. You know, James actually earlier I saw him mention, you know, that there's plenty of guys that are going to be coming up over the next few weeks, you know, especially once we hit September. You know, we're going to see those guys come up. But I got to take a trip when you were at the Ravens game.
Right.
I actually got a trip to the Aberdeen Ironbirds game. Some friends of mine, actually, two people that would be in our fantasy football draft this coming weekend.
Excited for that.
Yeah. I get to go with them. Their realtors hosted an event. It was great. We got club level access.
Nice.
I forgot my press pass.
It looked like the photo. That's why I was asking you. It looked like the photo was like the same angle as the press box.
It almost was. We were literally right next to it. But it was interesting to see. You know, Jean Carmona was our pickup from the Jonathan Scope trade.
Right.
Young kid has some speed. Like the speed. A little bit of an arm in the infield, which I thought was good. He's going to be development. You know, there were some Jonathan Scope-esque type traits that I saw. Mm-hmm. You know, quick ability to get the ball and get rid of it. Mm-hmm. But the hitting's going to need some work. Right now, he's batting .250 in Aberdeen. He went one for four with a walk and two strikeouts.
Okay.
The strikeouts looked ugly. Hmm. One thing he did have going for him, they had him at leadoff because of the speed. Do I think that's a long-term fix? No, especially if you got a guy like Mullins, right. You know, like we talked about with his speed. I could see long-term, you know, 4 years down the road maybe. Okay. This is a kid that could make it to the big leagues, but he's got to show the development. You know, he's showing little flashes, little signs. You know, he's hitting .250 in Aberdeen so far. He's not letting it up.
Right.
But he's not Chris Davis-esque.
And you got to be patient with these people. For anybody that's out there, like, you got to realize Aberdeen is low A baseball.
Yeah.
So he's got a long way to go through the learning curves and through just the traditional progression of a potential major leaguer. So, like you said, if that's going to be a 3 or 4 year process, then, you know, it is what it is. The main thing that you want to look at this level is how many tools does he have? Does he have the glove? Does he have the speed? Does he have the bat? You know, how many of the five tools does this kid have? And it sounds like he has a few of them, but he has some areas he needs to work on.
Yeah, he's definitely got some areas that he needs to work on. You know, in you can't be as concerned in low A ball, you know, or, you know, partial season ball like Aberdeen is. Mm-hmm. But one guy I had to point out too, because you and I got to meet his namesake.
This is who I've been waiting to hear about.
Dalton Hoyles. Mm-hmm. Really good in the outfield. I liked his movement. I liked his speed getting the balls out there. One thing I did see was his ability to take a pitch. He went 0 for 2 in the game, but had two walks.
Okay. So he's got a good eye.
He's got a good eye. Now, he's only hitting .176, but in 34 at-bats, the kid's got eight walks.
It's pretty good.
That's a pretty good ratio there.
That's a good ratio. It's almost one-third.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty daggone good, and I like what I'm seeing. The kid's got a good eye.
Right.
I didn't get to see him swing too much. He didn't make a whole lot of contact. He had two ground outs. But I see potential. Okay. You need a guy that can get on base, a guy that can sit there. He's got good speed. He's got good potential.
He's a smaller guy.
He's almost my size.
That's what I'm saying. He's a thinner guy. I didn't realize he was that small.
Did you just call me short? Is that what this is?
I didn't call you short. I called you thin. You're a thinner guy. And he is. He's not as big or as bulky as his father was. Obviously, his father, tractor mechanic, big bulky kind of guy. But he's a guy that I was just excited just because of the pedigree and, you know, us being there and the night that he debuted and all of that. So I was kind of interested to see how he'd done.
Yeah, no, he's been doing, in my opinion, the 176 batting average doesn't do it justice when you've got 8 walks. Just to bring that up, we've talked so much about, you know, wins and losses when it comes to pitchers. What about the other side with batters?
Right.
Walks don't get counted.
Yeah.
So a guy can be 0-50, but if he's 0-50 with 50 walks, that means he's walking one out of every 2 times.
Right.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's, you want a guy that's going to have a high on base percentage, and that's how you get there. You got to get on base, and whether it be walks and hit, you know,
walks and hits per innings pitch, yeah, right, or, you know, well, something like that for hitters, yeah. I just thought that was an interesting piece. I thought it was great to see these guys out there. It was a great environment. You know, we've said it before, going to those games. Look, I know the Orioles aren't winning,
right?
They're doing all these sort of different things. I'll be going to the game tomorrow night, getting my, if you don't have a ticket, buy a cheap ticket and go and get the giveaway for the shirt. It's a Maryland shirt. So it's the shape of Maryland, you know, the shape of the state with a bunch of little Orioles logos in it. And it is very comfortable shirt. I got one of the other shirts that they gave away a few weeks ago, very similar, like light cotton type blend, breathes well.
If I wore that shirt, the state of Maryland would turn into the state of like Texas. It would be all stretched out. I do not fit well in those shirts, so I'll pass on that one. But for you skinny folk that wear a size large or smaller, there you go. It's right up your alley.
Well, speaking of shirts, I think we cannot go without pointing out our new shirts.
Yeah, absolutely.
You guys can kind of see them a little bit. I'll tilt mine down so everybody can see it. Fred's, you can see yours.
Yeah.
These shirts, we've got them. We're going to be, you know, selling a few.
Yeah, doing some giveaways with them. We're excited. We got a few different colors. So if you like them, reach out. We'll figure out and get in contact with you and set up a way to get you one.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to have different ways to be able to get a hold of one. Like I said, some giveaways, some discounts, stuff like that. That news will be to come. In the meantime, you know, stay tuned. We've got a whole bunch of different stuff kind of in the works that we're having fun with this. We know that you guys like listening to us. As quiet as it's been tonight on social media,
it's been quiet.
But people have been coming in and out. It has been. I've been watching everybody coming in and out, and it's been pretty steady. So you guys are watching. Comment. Come on, somebody say something. James has been quiet all night. He's probably watching a game.
We probably put him to sleep. He's probably going to. Night.
And Sherry did reach out and say hi, so we have to say hi to her.
Hey, Sherry, we appreciate you tuning in like you always do. I got a shirt for you. I told you I'd get you one. I've got you one, so it's on its way. I got to see you soon. So
there you go. So
on more serious news, something that we can't do this podcast and not talk about, being that we are a coverall for Maryland sports, Baltimore sports. The investigation that's going on right now at the University of Maryland after the untimely death of offensive lineman Jordan McNair. Messy situation at the University of Maryland right now.
I don't even know if messy describes this, man.
Yeah.
This is just straight a debacle.
So for those of you out there that don't know much about the story as to what's going on, I'll kind of give you just a quick synopsis. Started with the Jordan McNair situation, where he suffered a heat stroke doing 100-yard sprints, which experts say that if a heat stroke is treated properly within the first 30 minutes, I mean, it almost has a 100% recovery rate. That, you know, heat strokes happen. If it's done right with, you know, ice therapy and ice tub and that kind of thing to bring the body temperature down within the first 30 minutes, that, you know, chances of saving a person going through that are almost 100%. So yeah, pretty easily treatable. Unfortunately, he arrived at the hospital 40 minutes after 911 was called, with a body temperature at 106, which experts say is dangerously high.
Yeah, it is.
And it only took them 12 minutes to get it down to 102, which same experts say is a much safer body temperature.
104, by the way, is deadly.
Right. But just seeing it took 12 minutes to get him from 106 down to 102, which is a much safer zone, that had the trainers and people at Maryland acted accordingly, this situation could have been avoided. It's sad. It's a sad situation.
Well, you had, you know, from the whole situation, you had Durkin that was put on administrative leave, along with the strength and conditioning coach, Rick Court, and I think it's the head athletic trainer, Wes Robinson, along with the director of athletic training, Steve Nordwell.
He was the assistant athletic director.
Your assistant athletic director. You know, so you have all these guys get placed on administrative leave. Now, in a press conference today, we learn from, I think it was Damon Evans, who is, I want to say, like, the director of all athletics.
Yeah, and the university president.
And the university president. I think Evans was actually the one who spoke on it, that said they have now cut ties with Rick Court.
Yeah, and if you listen to the press conference, I mean, they put the majority of the blame on the trainers and not so much the coaching staff, which, look, everybody had a piece in this. Everybody had a hand in this. Everybody that was there, including, which has come to light, DJ Durkin was there.
Your offensive lineman drops to the ground. You can't tell me as a head coach you didn't see him drop.
Right. And I mean, there was one, I think the athletic trainer has been quoted as saying, drag his ass off the field.
Yeah.
You know, it's a sad situation. It was 45 minutes into their practice session when he started showing signs of the heat stroke, but yet it was 90 minutes before they got him to the hospital and cooled down enough. Like, I mean, that just goes to show you how much time really did pass before this guy received really any treatment. Nothing. Yeah. Nothing was treated properly at the University of Maryland. It's a really, really bad situation for the university. And I don't think that there's an easy solution. So not only is this going on, but then right after this situation, there was a report released by the Washington Post and ESPN about an abusive football culture at Maryland. Things that they call it toxic culture or whatever. Some of it, look, I you know, playing football growing up, football, it's a different kind of sport. It's a brutal sport in itself, and coaches treat you differently in football than they do in baseball or basketball. I can even remember, even at the Pop Warner level, being little, and
a lot of coaches will call it mental toughness.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And now, granted, some of this stuff that there have been accusations are, it's a little over the top. But some of the stuff, you know, with guys yelling and cursing and things of that nature, these are things that if you think are only limited to happening at the University of Maryland, you're kidding yourself. Oh, this happens across the country. So if this comes to light and there becomes actions taken based on, not talking about the Jordan McNair situation, that's something totally separate in itself.
Right.
That needs to be investigated into it itself, which it is. And there was obviously mishandling of that situation. But just talking about the coaching culture for a second, a couple of things that have been thrown out there. So one, meals being smacked out of players' hands. belittling and humiliation, embarrassment of players, extreme verbal abuse, questioning players' masculinity.
Didn't they say something about like weights and stuff being thrown at some of these players?
Yeah, that was going to be the next thing. So yeah, some of these play, one of the coaches, and I think it actually was the trainer that was let go.
Court.
Was throwing like small weights and different objects at players when he was angry. Even some of the coaches endorsing unhealthy eating habits. Like one player was told to overeat to the point of vomiting. Those types of things obviously are next level. That's over the top. You know, some of these things. But
is that ignorance or negligence? Let me ask that before you go off on that. Because I think that's a debatable point to this. Is that ignorance or is that negligence?
I think it's ignorance. I mean, it's like I said, some of the verbal stuff, it's been going on forever.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like I said, even at the lower levels at Pop Warner High School, I mean, it's gone on forever.
How many times have we seen, you know, different reports? I feel like every 3 to 6 months we see a report from, I think it was last year. I remember the report of the one coach that was throwing basketballs,
right,
you know, at the players.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying it's okay. I don't think either of us are saying that. But sometimes it is. Some of these coaches go and they take it, they do cross the line. But some of them, they put them through this tough mental toughness and you know, in their eyes and saying, you know, you need to be able to, no matter what I'm yelling at you, keep your composure, keep yourself together, but also know you have a job to do. Your life can literally depend on these things. You could be, if you're not putting the effort in, don't come onto my basketball court. I want guys that I can get out there. And if I can have 10 guys going to the NBA, I want 10 guys going to the NBA, or 10 guys going to the NFL. I can have 10 guys going to the NFL. You know, I think that's the mentality on it, but I don't know. What do you think on it?
Ed Norris on 105.7 made a good point this morning. If the military makes changes to the way that they treat their people because of the culture change and the way things are, then coaches need to do the same thing.
Oh, absolutely.
And what was once accepted and what was once okay, just because it was once okay and just because it was once accepted doesn't mean it doesn't need to be addressed and doesn't need to be changed. Yes, football is a man sport, and yes, it's a tough sport. But there's a way about getting the best out of your players. And it doesn't need to be belittling somebody. It doesn't need to be putting somebody down and humiliating somebody. Somebody that needs to gain weight, you don't do that by shoving ho-hos and Twinkies down their throat until they vomit.
Yeah, no.
You know, there's ways you go about things. And yeah, a lot of this, if the reports are true, are over the top. It's a mess, man. Maryland... The athletic program, with everything that's been kind of going on with the basketball program and the question marks about paying players and stuff, and now this with the football team, it's not a good look for the University of Maryland.
It's a black mark.
Yeah. It's not a good look for, you know, for even Under Armour. Under Armour is, you know, a big backing to the University of Maryland and a big sponsor, you know, to... Who knows? Even though he's an alum, even though he's a University of Maryland alum, Plank could pull out of there.
Yeah.
He's dumped millions and millions of dollars into that campus and into that program.
I wouldn't be surprised if it gauges in the billions, to be honest.
Yeah, it could be close to the billion. It's a messy situation, but first and foremost, the biggest thing here is the loss of a life, you know?
Player safety.
For me, you know, when you go through the college recruitment process and the coaches come into your house and they sit there and they're talking to your parents, they're selling them on being there for your kid, being an extension of your family,
knowing what's best for your child,
knowing and looking out for what's best in your child's interest. And Durkin had to have sold that to this McNair family to get him to commit to University of Maryland and to get a phone call and to find out, you know, that your son had passed due to the negligence of Durkin and his staff. There's no quick fix for this at the University of Maryland.
Absolutely not. I mean, you know, I do give Wallace Lowe, president of University of Maryland, some credit here because he's stepped up. They've already released Court. He stepped up and has now said, you know, that they are taking full legal and moral responsibility for everything that happened.
The problem I had with him is he came out and he, you know, gave his condolences to the McNair family today, not months ago. That McNair's death is now months ago, 2 months ago.
You don't think there was a phone call there?
I'm not saying that there wasn't, but in a situation like this, you go public with it.
I agree. I'm just saying, I thought you were saying that this was the first. I was like, I think a conversation had been had.
Maybe not. Who knows? We don't know. But still, for this to be the first time you've gone publicly and say, you know, you're sorry or, you know, condolences to the McNair family 2 months later, once these investigations and once the story drops from the Washington Post and the ESPN, that's when you choose to do it. I don't know. I think for me, the Maryland program, as much as I liked the signing of DJ Durkin and the direction of Maryland football and the way it was going and the amount of recruits and everything that were coming here, the only way you fix this or start to fix this is hit the reset button. Get rid of the entire staff.
Yeah.
Start fresh. Again,
how many recruits are you going to lose because of this?
You're going to lose a ton. I mean, if you're going up against another Big Ten, Penn State's right up the street. You're going up against Penn State. Penn State's going to be throwing that in recruits' faces left and right. You really want to go play for a program like that?
Especially when Penn State's recovering from their own scandal,
right,
from a few years back. I mean, that's the only thing that I would say, you know, that would make it a rough example,
Penn State did that. They hit the reset button.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
They got rid of Paterno. They got rid of everybody that was associated with that program that had anything to do with what that situation was. They went about it the right way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you're right on. They have to get rid of everybody.
Right. And it's a sad situation for the McNair family. I do not feel bad for Durkin and one iota. Piss poor handled.
Yeah, it was just poor handling all around. I am curious because it hasn't come out yet. We haven't heard much from Durkin.
No.
So if I'm Wallace Lowe, I'm making Durkin get out in front of the camera within the next week.
I don't know if that happens, but we'll see.
We'll see.
Warning.
All right, Scott. It's 2 minute warning. It's been a long show. It's been a good show. But a lot of stuff to cover. We got a lot of, I know, outside news that we don't normally cover, so I'm interested to see what you got going here.
Yeah, I got a lot.
All right, your 2 minute warning. It starts now.
Well, we hit another turn in this Ohio State scandal. Zach Smith somehow kept a secret from Urban Meyer that he had a DUI. How the hell does this slip past anybody at the university? Especially when the guy gets, after the DUI, he got a 5 on his performance review for adheres to university's core and values.
Right.
What a mess this is.
Yeah, another situation.
Rokon Smith finally ends his holdout with the Bears and settles for a 4-year $18 million contract. Oh, and Adam Schefter is reporting that there's going to be an additional $11 million in bonuses. These rookies are stepping onto the field with more money than anybody else and guys that have been playing. Is this good negotiating on their part, or is this poor control on the part of NFL owners and the NFL itself?
Yeah.
That's a discussion for later.
Absolutely.
In sad news, I'm taking a page out of Fred's book here. Going morbid. Leonis Martin, my thoughts are with him and his family. Fred, I don't know if you heard about this. Outfielder for the Cleveland Indians. He's in stable conditioning. He had a bacterial infection last week. He was rushed to the hospital where they learned the infection had entered his bloodstream and started shutting down some of his internal organs. The team president, Chris Antonetti, said that he's making progress, but it's going to be measured in weeks, not days. There's question marks if he'll even get back. Rookie David Bote of the Cubs had a pinch hit two strike walk off grand slam.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and he got to meet the good old Bill Murray afterwards. Browns and Bud Light, they teamed up for victory fridges. That's right. When the Browns win their first regular season home game, they're going to open up those fridges for free beer. Aaron Rodgers was grilled for his comments for being critical of his receivers on his practice squad. He told the media, he's just trying to win games. And I've got to hit on the last one. I actually had two more. I didn't get through all of them.
Go for it.
Quick, real quick. James Harden, negative light. He threw a woman's cell phone at a nightclub. Then walked over, one of his agents or one of his friends gave her $200, and then he walked over and gave her $300. She was then taken to the hospital to be checked out because he grabbed her wrist to grab the phone. Dan Patrick is a busy man, but he's taking over for Joe Buck on Undeniable. By the way, the slated guests for Patrick include Oscar De La Hoya, Carl Lewis, Greg Norman, Cheryl Miller, George Brett, and Baltimore's very own three-time World Series champion and Cy Young Award winner, Jim Palmer.
Nice. I like it.
And last but not least, I thought this was hilarious. If you have not seen this video, Fred, you need to go see it. The Miami Marlins first base coach, Perry Hill, was caught putting lettuce in his helmet to keep cool during the heat.
Wow. I've heard of some tactics before, but I've never heard of lettuce. Good Lord.
Some experts say that lettuce is good, but cabbage works better. I don't know how you get to that, but Social media started letting the jokes, the lettuce jokes roll.
I can imagine.
Like, hopefully the lettuce will help Hill romaine cool. And if you have any idea if this vegetable strategy is truly effective, let us know.
Oh, God. As corny as corny gets.
I saw that and I had to share that.
Oh, geez.
That was too funny. I do have to say, you know, on the morbid fact, since you always like to end on a morbid fact, Leonis Martin, baseball-wise, you know how I am with baseball. I got a
sad situation.
Yeah, I mean, that's really tough. We were actually talking about it with bacterial infections and, right, you know, knowing people that have been through that. And that's just, this guy was literally within, like, moments or hours. It was life-threatening.
Yeah.
I mean, he was taken to the hospital, and it was to the point his internal organs were shutting down.
Yeah.
So all my thoughts are with the Martin family. He's a good player.
Yeah,
he is a good player.
Is.
You know, Cleveland picked him up from Detroit. You wish him all the best of luck. I really hope, you know, he has a full recovery, and I hope he gets back to baseball, but obviously full recovery. You know, it health comes first. So
needs to get back to hitting dingers.
If you didn't see that, oh my god. I'll let you tell that one real quick.
No, I'm not even gonna tell the story. Just Google search Little League I hit dingers.
Or Little Al hits dingers.
Little Al hits dingers. Either one, you'll find the video. Absolutely hilarious.
Oh, my goodness, folks. Well, that is the end of episode 58, man. We're getting up there.
Golly.
With this one, we appreciate everybody. You know, it was a quiet episode as far as comments. James chimed in at the last minute there and said the Big Ten taking a hit from Penn State, Michigan State, Maryland, and Ohio.
Yeah.
That's a great point, James. Great
absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely. Across the board in the Big Ten.
But be sure to check us out on our website, www.birdlandbs.com. Follow us on all of our social media sites. That's Twitter, Instagram, Twitter. You can check us out on @BirdlandBS. You can check me and Fred out @FredBirdlandPS, @ScottBirdlandBS. Check us out on YouTube. The audio podcast, iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, Podbean, TuneIn app, Stitcher, you name it, we're there. As always, thanks for tuning in, and come back next Tuesday night for the next installment of Birdland BS. I'm Scott.
I'm Fred.
See you guys.
We'll see you.